Welcome to the Startup Dentist Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Trutter. After over 800 plus successful dental startups, I'm here to share everything I know about starting a profitable and purposeful dental practice with you. In each episode, we get right to the core of what it takes to launch and grow a successful dental practice. So whether you've just started researching dental startups or you've been sitting on the fence for a while, this podcast is your personal roadmap to your very own dental practice. Let's get into it.
Good evening, everybody. Tonight, I want to be able to show you three key elements that can help you go from where you're at as an associate to a very confident practice owner. If you're just coming in here, maybe this is your first step towards starting up your practice, or maybe this is your first step towards even exploring the idea if practice ownership is right for you. Cool, you're in a great place. My goal for tonight is not to talk or convince anybody into starting your own practice. It is not for the faint of heart. But what I want you all to leave with this evening are some next steps or even some goals to move forward and some insights from Ideal Practices, the hundreds of startups that we've been a part of, the over 850 that I've personally been a part of in almost two decades of doing this. So I want to share three big elements that you can move forward in order for you to afford a startup, but more importantly, build one that could be profitable. If you're not familiar with Ideal Practices, I'll just say this. We do startups. We do startups really, really well. We have about 450 years of total combined experience in startup land. We don't do acquisitions, and I always make distinction between like practice management advisors and consultants as opposed to startups. We do startups. We love working with associate dentists. We don't work with DSOs either. I always say that for some of you, maybe you're working for a DSO. I always say this, that I love DSOs. The reason why I love DSOs in corporate dentistry is they seem to be the greatest supplier of clients for our company. So many of you may be working as a corporate dentistry and you're thinking of yourself, how can I impact my community? How can I have freedom or control? If that's you, you're in the right place. I would say nearly everyone that works with us always has these questions about the kind of clinical freedom that they want to have in private with a private practice. Some of them are thinking about the control they want to have. Maybe there's this work-life balance that many of you are wanting to achieve. And what I want to give you tonight is some meaningful steps forward so that you can achieve this. You might be sitting there. You may have been working as an associate for the last X amount of years. You may be sitting there thinking, how do I take steps forward? And I want you to leave with ideas that you can move forward with and to be able to take meaningful action here from this evening. If anybody has ever heard some of our success stories, you will find some three key elements that run through each one of our clients. And what I want to do is share with you just a quick story here of Dr. Brian. If you've been on our website, if you've seen this kind of like a mini documentary, this will kind of sum up something. Dr. Brian was not a practice owner before. He built a $1 million practice in 12 months. This was his goal. Now, I'm not here to promise you that a $1 million practice is going to happen to you in 12 months. It can. We have formulas like that, but not everybody wants that. And for Brian, he talks about more than just a $1 million practice. He talks about like the impact it's had on his family and his community.
I'll sum this up in three ways. And these three elements is where I'm going to go through, talk about the affordability of a startup, but more importantly, looking beyond the affordability. And the formula that we talk about is this. We talk about, we call it the three P's. So if you take anything away from this evening, it's these three P methodology. The first one is practice, which is getting open. Like we're talking demographics, the right funding, the right real estate, like those kinds of strategies. Too many times though, and I'll talk through this, so many startups stop and end here. They stop with the idea of getting open. So I'll just say this, like, all of you here can open a practice. You need real estate, you need four walls, a roof, and some chairs, and you can all get a practice. This is where so many stop. They like, I'm open, what do I need to do? What we need to do is achieve profits. Now, I'm not talking about like building the most profitable practice ever, but I'll just say this. I've never been a non-for-profit dental practice before, and I don't want to start. You need to have profits. Now, when it comes to profits, what are we talking about? The right marketing strategies, which I'm going to touch on tonight. We are going to talk about systems. We're going to talk about protocols. we're going to talk about like actually leadership elements and systems inside of our practice to become and build a profitable practice from day one. Because if it's not profitable, then it's a hobby. So I want to make sure that you're aiming towards and almost looking like this as a tier, like got this first level, like I got a practice. Yep, we got those elements. We're going to talk through that. We're going to talk about profits tonight, how to build a profitable practice. And then lastly, this third element, which is purpose. What is this for? And how do you authentically and genuinely connect within your community to differentiate yourself from other dental practices, maybe other corporate dental practices that are in your area? And that's by having and really sharing what is the bigger purpose. Is this a bigger purpose for you? Is this a bigger purpose for your community? Is this something for your family? Like to be able to authentically have a bigger purpose that then makes that distinction between your practice and others. So what you'll notice is this three P's, I don't know if everyone's seen this, but this is our 13 stages. This is like our step-by-step program that we guide our clients through. So the three P's kind of like layers over this. And like the practice kind of ties into these first few elements, talking about demographics and financing, the design, the real estate, and all those kind of those tangible elements. The profits element, it ties into the implementation. We're talking about marketing, the development of the business systems within the practice. And then finally, the purpose talks about really kind of like beyond opening. We're talking about the purpose of that practice within the community. Maybe that's something you want to give towards. Maybe you're thinking about like, man, there's something I really want to connect with inside of the practice. Now, this 13 stages also, I don't know if anybody has a copy of my book, The Startup Dentist. If not, I'll tell everybody later on. If you don't have a copy, I'll show you how to get a free copy. So let's talk about affordability of a practice. And I'm going to break down some of the numbers that go into a startup practice. And maybe you're sitting thinking, okay, I have student loans. I have a lot of student loans. Well, I'm going to give you like even tips on like what to do with those and how to even navigate those waters. And I know you're sitting here thinking, I don't know if I can afford a startup. Well, I'm going to break this down and really kind of break a myth is that I don't want you to aim towards simply affording a practice. And here's why. What most people think is like, I went to a bank, the bank approved my loan. This is a good idea, right? Like I got startup loan, bank approves me. I'm going to do this. I'll just say, just because a bank has approved you doesn't mean like your startup is a great, like you don't have a plan for that. What you need to make sure is like there's a plan beyond just the loan, because of the 30 or 40 people that are here, guess what? Probably 98% of you, maybe 99% of you will get an approval for a startup loan. It's more of a numeric value. So I say affordability is most of you can afford the idea. I want you to look beyond affording, because affording to me just means the doors remained open. And maybe some of you can think of a friend. Maybe some of you can think of a colleague or maybe that dental practice in your town around the corner that opened. Maybe they continue to work as an associate 2 to 3 years. Maybe they're open full time. Yep, I can raise my hand like, know of these practices. I hear these practices. I see them on Facebook groups. I want you all to avoid that. And avoiding that is simply looking beyond the affordability, like, can I just simply afford this? It's like looking beyond that, because most people stop at the idea of I can afford it. The dollars and cents make sense. The dollars make sense and therefore it. So I want to look beyond the affordability. So just because a bank has approved you doesn't mean this is a great plan, because most all of you will get an approval for a loan. And I'll break down some elements here. So what goes into your budget of your startup loan? So I'm going to break down some costs here, and I'm going to go through like, here's what needs to be included into your practice loan. Your construction costs, obviously, this is going to be one of your biggest line items when it comes to your startup loan, the construction elements. Your equipment, the second largest, you know, line item. Any kind of consulting fees, your permitting costs, real estate acquisition. I'll talk about real estate kind of separately. If there's a purchase, but I'm talking about like if there's, you know, a lease deposit and things like that. Attorney's fees, obviously marketing. And guess what, folks? Even your monthly loan payments. Now, some of the largest dental-specific lenders in the country, they will fund 100% of your costs. So as a part of opening, even including your loan payments. So, you know, with the right bank, you won't have to put any money into it. With the right lender, you're going to have what's called working capital. Working capital will cover like marketing and expenses and even like maybe the first couple months of your loan payments while you're building your patient base up. Because this, because you're producing, I say producing dentistry from day one, you're not collecting dentistry. So like there's always that lag behind in terms of the production versus the collection number. So that's why you need to make sure that you align yourself with the right bank and the right team from a lending perspective that will actually help you propel your practice forward. So what goes into this? So I'll kind of break this down. Construction. This is of about a $700,000 to $750,000 loan. Now, I'm not saying that all of your loans are going to be $700,000 or $750,000. Some of them could be less. Some of them could be a little bit more. I'm giving you kind of a rough average. Also depends on your equipment needs. Are you a specialist? Some different requirements that could be there. Different areas of the country, construction costs are higher or lower. They are literally all over the place when it comes to different marketplaces. But kind of giving you round numbers to give you an idea like where this almost $750,000 go. Here's where it goes. It goes into your construction, your fit out, your architectural, your engineering, your total construction is going to be included. So we're talking about maybe $350,000 to $450,000 when it comes to construction. Your equipment. I'm not just talking about chairs and lights and delivery units. I'm talking about your dental equipment, your computers, your networking, any kind of practice management systems, any type of sterilization, all those different elements are going to go into capital equipment. So, you know, of that, it could be about, you know, anywhere around $175,000, including all your imaging and everything that goes into that. I kind of carved out real estate because I would say in another webinar in the future here coming up, I'll be talking real estate strategies. Real estate purchases are completely different from your startup loan. So if you're thinking about purchasing real estate, and I can talk to that, I'm actually going to talk even more detail here in the future on that. If there are any questions later on, I could talk to your real estate. Real estate's a totally separate transaction. So I'm talking about a startup loan. I'm talking about your practice loan. Real estate and a real estate loan, if you're purchasing real estate, is a completely separate loan, typically to a separate entity that you would lease back to your practice and so on and so forth. So I kind of carved out and said, real estate is separate. And then last but not least, your working capital. These are things like supplies, signage, marketing, furniture, payroll, any other costs that really don't fit into these other big budgets. So these are like three, like the kind of the three-legged, of your budget. Inside of those, then there's a lot more detail that goes into that. So if you're looking at total, average is about $750,000, you know, plus or minus, depending on the marketplace, depending on the economics of your space, it depends on how much build out needs to be done. So I'm just giving you like where are averages, you know, from a nationwide perspective. Good. Okay. Some myths when it comes to startups. Number one, your student loans. I would venture to say that many of you here still have student loans. Cool. My advice when it comes to student loans is this. This is a myth, that you need to pay off your student loans and your student debt first. This is a myth. Banks would much rather you have some debt in cash than none of each. Let me repeat that. You want to have cash and debt. If you are thinking about practice ownership, acquisition, or startup in the next couple of years, then have your student loan payment align with your future goals, your near future goals. So if you are on pay or repay or any kind of income-based IBR type of repayment structure, I always say this, stay there. The reason why is that's going to be your lowest possible payment today. So when banks look at student loan debt, they're not looking at the total amount of debt that you have. What they're looking at is how much do you need a service on a monthly basis? So the more the manageable payment that you have, i.e. pay or repay or IBR or any kind of those, the better off you're going to be, because cash flow, they talk about, there's a saying, cash is king. I say cash flow is the entire kingdom. They look at cash flow. Cash flow is basically what's going in to what's going out of your pocket on a monthly basis. So the lower the payment that you have in terms of your student loans, the better off that you're going to be. So don't force yourself into higher student loan payments it, because it could, I'm not saying it will, I'm saying it could prevent you, because if it forces you into from a $1,000 payment a month to a $4,000 or $5,000 payment a month, that could actually have a negative impact on your ability for funding, because you've just kind of eaten up a little bit of your cash flow on a monthly basis. So you don't need to be debt-free. What you actually need to have is cash on hand. Now, some people talk, say, you know, we'll go to the bank that does 100% financing. Well, most banks, and we work with some of the largest banks in the country, nearly every bank does 100% financing. The difference is most every single bank requires some sort of liquid assets. How much is that? Generally speaking, you want to have somewhere between 5 and about 10% of what you're going to borrow from the bank in cash reserve. So that could be liquid assets, so non-retirement. So we're talking cash, you know, not people are going to sit around with like maybe a shoebox of cash or anything, but we're talking checking, savings, any securities, stocks, things like that are liquid. Non-retirement assets, 5 to 10% is a great number to be able to show the bank. It doesn't mean you have to put it into the bank. The right bank, they won't require a down payment for your practice loan, real estate loan different, but for a practice loan, you shouldn't put in any money with the right bank, but 5 to 10% puts you in a good place. So if you are like trying to rip down your student loan debt so fast because you want to look so good for the banks and you have no money set aside, stop paying down your student loan debt and start immediately putting away reserves, liquid reserves to be able to show that bank. Number two myth is, I don't need to have a business plan because I heard some banks don't require them. You're building a business, have a business plan. Some elements you want to have in your business plan are really, I call it kind of the brag part, which is kind of an executive summary. Make sure you can tell a story about why the bank should lend to you. Or, you know, some banks are going to require them, some don't. Even if a bank doesn't require, have a business plan. You need to talk about who you are, what differentiates you. You need to have an idea of like be able to explain your budget. What is your marketing strategy? What are the demographics of the marketplace and how you're going to, you know, capitalize on the marketplace? And then last but not least, you want to make sure you can have some projections. Projections are obviously not guarantees. And that's why it's called a business plan, not a business guarantee. What you want to make sure you have in there are projections of what kind of income, how many patients do you have? What is the break? You know, kind of get an idea of like, okay, what you're doing now as an associate, and get an idea of like, what are you producing? What do you need to produce? What is the procedure mix in order to get you to this point, depending on, you know, what your overhead expenses are going to be in terms of like real estate and things like that from day one. But have a business plan. I already mentioned this. If a bank approves your loan, they think you have a solid business plan. The banks aren't going to look at your demographics. They're not going to look at these elements. Those are things that are so important that you need to understand, things like demographics and the opportunity, your marketing strategy. There's not a bank out there that's going to look through and say, do you have a great marketing strategy? All they're looking at is they're going to look at a financial sheet. So they're going to look at like a personal financial sheet. This is not one, but they're going to look at a sheet. They're going to fill this out. It's going to be called a personal financial statement. On there, you're going to put on there kind of cash you have, liquid assets, retirement, what kind of debt you have, what kind of payments you have, car payment, house payment, and things like that. That's what they look at. They're making a decision on numeric values. They're not looking at your plan of your startup and saying, oh, this is great. They're looking at this purely from a financial perspective. And the reason why they're looking at that is this, which is the biggest myth, or I call it the biggest lie in our industry, is less than 1% of dental offices fail. You will meet with a banker. I was in banking. We were told less than 1% of dental offices fail. I can't see faces, but if I saw faces, I'd show hands like, we've heard this. Yes, you know, 1% fail. Okay, failure for a bank is, I saw a hand go up over there. Thanks, Crystal. 1% fail. So this is when a bank writes off a loan. That means you are no longer in business. But banks, I think a failure is you open up a practice and you continue to associate 2 to 3 years after you open your practice. To me, that's failing in your startup. That does not count into the mix of banks. They also don't count if, they're just counting, are we being paid? So what this means is 99% of the borrowers pay on a monthly basis. Doesn't say how much they're profitable. doesn't say, are they struggling? It doesn't say they're working 2 or 3 days outside of their practice years after they open their doors. So when someone says a startup or a dental practice, only 1% of you are going to fail. It's a misnomer. It's a misleading statement because it doesn't tell the true story. My goal for our clients is simply this. If you are not work outside, I want our clients 6 to 12 months. So on average, our clients after 6 months, they are no longer working in their practices. How quickly? Because if you're an associate and you're here, you don't want to be an associate. So how quickly can you get out of debt? Or excuse me, can you get out of working as an associate? That is a goal. How quickly can you do that? Now, when it comes to beyond opening doors, the other thing about this element of from a funding perspective and affordability is this. I want to talk about savings strategies versus growth strategies. I did show you a figure, average, say $750,000 on an average basis. What I want to do is I want everyone to focus on this growth strategies. I think there's a lot of times where people talk about like how you can save on a startup. Hey, listen, one of our clients the other day just saved, Steve, one of our senior advisors here. He's one of our senior advisors for all things equipment, construction, technology. I saw him the other day over the weekend. I was at a volleyball tournament for my daughter, and I went over to his house to say hi and see his wife and just chat with him for a little bit. He said, hey, one of our clients, he talked about Dr. Dana. She's in Tennessee. He said, I want to share something with you. He said, I found almost $200,000 in savings on her construction. And I was like, that's insane. How? Things weren't spec'd out right. There was cost overruns. There were things that were included with the lease and things like that, that were included with the building. And just like architect was driving cost up and things like that. So there are a lot of savings that are out there. What I don't promise to you or any of our clients is like, you will build the cheapest practice. And what I don't want any of you to focus on is how do I build a cheap startup? There are ways to save, but what I don't want you to do is build the cheapest practice in your town. Now, what I'm not advocating for is the most expensive startup, because in reality, no one will remember, you know, if you had ADEC chairs. You know, I'm just picking an ADEC. Like, no one's gonna remember like the glass walls and things like that in your office. And I think there's a lot of areas you could save, but too many times I think there's like, how do I build the cheapest startup? You'll just end up with a cheap startup. Things like marketing takes an investment. Things like building systems inside of the practice, the right team and those elements actually takes an investment. So when it comes to funding and when it comes to affordability, look beyond the opening and affordability and how to cut every cost here. What I always focus on is what are the growth strategies? What is the investment that I can make in order to grow this practice to a point of profitability and not work as an associate any longer? So growth strategies versus simply saving strategies, because in over 20 years of doing this, I've never had a dentist come up to me and said, I saved myself to success. I saved myself to prosperity. My joke is always when it comes to working capital, I always say it's working capital. Make it work. I think a lot of times it's like, I'm going to hold on to working capital like grim death and not spend anything for the first few months of my opening my doors. But folks, that working capital is there for things like marketing. If you invest it in the return on that is patient growth, case acceptance, and now you've got revenues coming in. So that working capital, like you will spend it. You need to invest it wisely. So focus those elements when it comes to spending on growth strategies. So that's the first piece, talking about the opening of that. There's one of our clients down there. The second element is this. I'm on Facebook. I troll on Facebook and a lot of the Facebook groups and things like that. This was a post from a few weeks ago. You don't know me, this disturbs me. This was a post from a startup opening their doors. And the post was simply, look at this. I'm opening a month. I don't know where even to begin when it comes to marketing. Folks, marketing and systems give you a timeline. It starts around the time you not only begin the idea of a start, but realistically, around the time you secure your real estate is when you need to start thinking about marketing, not a month before, because this is the typical startup I see. It's like I focus so much on the opening, on this, on the real estate and the chairs, and I got all these things. Oh man, I need patience. A marketing strategy takes way more than a month, and there's not a trick to marketing. And I'll talk to you about marketing here in a few moments. So what I'm gonna say is this, when it comes to building this, what I wanna do is I wanna help you build with profits. And so the second element in this 3P element, we talk about affordability, the practice, like real estate. Well, I can even break down a lot of different things there, but I wanna talk about profits. And profits and growth comes from systems. Number one, obviously, is a new patient growth, i.e. a real marketing strategy, not some trick or tactics or what someone said one person worked in their area 10 years ago or where it worked one time in a totally different part of the country. Marketing for a startup is different and it requires a true marketing strategy. We're talking about patient retention. We're talking about leadership and practice management inside of the practice. We're talking about setting up your financial guidelines. Things like if you have a no-show, okay, well, what's your no-show policy? What are your financial guidelines for these sounds like? What is your new patient experience? Like, how long is a new patient exam? How long do those things take? These things take development. Hiring strategies, HR, one of the biggest headaches that our team of advisors, we call it the Startup MBA, goes through is hiring. It's so difficult to find the right people, but it takes time. And again, around the time that you start to secure your real estate, it's time you're gonna say, now it starts to find those right candidates, HR, for those elements. Navigating insurances, yucky. I can talk to you about my philosophy on insurances. I think, you know, insurances are a great thing to have, especially as a startup. I'm not saying collect them all. Have we had clients that are out of network or fee for service? Yeah, a few. It's a different growth pattern. It's a different strategy, especially from a marketing perspective. You really got to boost that up really, really differently. It also depends on if you're in a rural area, if you're in a more metropolitan area. So within those elements as well. Navigating insurances, it's tough. We have an entire insurance team that has to navigate through those insurances. What are the right PPOs? What are the fee schedules? By the way, folks, like credentialing for insurances takes 4 to 6 months, sometimes longer in some areas. So it does take time to do this. So what you don't want to do, or if you're acquiring practice, I see this a lot, when you acquire practice or you buy a practice, you're not going to be in network, you know, from day one because you haven't acquired that practice yet. So you may acquire practice, you may not be in network. So you need to make sure you understand what are the insurances. What are the insurances for your marketplace? What are the best ones? Like, and maybe are there ones that are specific to you? Like, we've had clients that are maybe ex-military dentists and people like that that do want to carry certain insurances. But you need to make sure that there's a strategy for navigating insurances. And when it comes to systems as a startup, you need to wear every hat. Yes, you're going to have, you may be hire from a hiring perspective, you may start off with, if you're a general dentist, for example, you may start off with like maybe an assistant that could be cross-trained, maybe a front desk person. Normally, not too many are hiring a hygienist from day one, and we can talk through that for some of you. But it's important to understand all the inner workings of your practice. So if you're working as an associate right now, be a super sleuth without raising any suspicions of your current employer. Navigate through like your practice management software, if you're working with certain ones, or maybe you're finding out like, man, I like Open Dental or Dentrix or EagleSoft or whatever you guys are using. You know, understand some of the inner working systems in there. Talk with a mentor about this. Now, none of our clients come in and say, wow, I have all the systems down. This is a training process. So don't think that, wow, do I need to know all the inner workings of a dental practice before I become a practice owner? No, you don't. Oh, well, before I even start this journey? No. Do you need them before you open your doors? Yes. You really need to understand, like, what are the basic systems that are in there? And you as the doctor need to really get a great understanding. We make our clients put through insurance claims and things like that to really understand the inner workings of a practice, because, you know, you hear about embezzlement in practices. So it's always important that you have a pulse on even the inner working systems. In the future, as you grow your practice, you have more assistants, more front desk people, you have more administrative elements. Obviously, you need to take a step back. But from the beginning, you really need to understand every working system inside your practice from day one and really understand that. So as you're working as an associate, start to watch what's happening inside the practice. Start to gather personal preferences of how things are done now in your practice. You may be learning things right now as an associate that you would love to incorporate in your practice. For many of you, I find this with many of our clients, most of them come back and say, I think I what I've learned is I know what I don't want to do in my own practice by working as an associate. Whatever it is, like, start gathering that information now so that you can actually have profits in there. And obviously, I talk about patient experience and patient metrics. I don't get hung up too much on overhead expenses as a startup, and here's why. I'll give you the overhead, typical overhead percentages of a startup, 100%. I say that because I see folks talking about, like, what's my overhead and what should my percentages be of this and marketing and payroll. Those percentages are not normalized yet as a startup. Those are conversations to have a year or two into your practice to see where your spend is. Day one, it's about growth and new patients. It's an old sales thing, but it's like sales cures all. The more patients, the better you're going to feel. The better your team is going to feel about what's happening, especially as a new startup. Maybe the people you hired left out of their practices. Maybe they left a practice that followed you, or maybe something like that. And I always say, like, you have to focus on, from a marketing perspective, from day one. So systems, marketing, we're talking about now we're becoming a profitable practice. So we got the practice. Now we're going to move into profits. Many practice owners can get to this next tier, which is profits. And then next, I'll talk about purpose. Startup marketing. This is like a whole seminar itself that I'm actually going to have in the near future, in the next few weeks, talking about marketing. But tonight, I do want to give you five really big core principles when it comes to startups, marketing for startups. Here are the four essential elements. Number one is timing. I call it your Hoover Dam moment. You don't want to be too late on your marketing, or you don't hit the market correctly. You don't want to be too early, because you don't want to reschedule new patients that you acquired and you're not ready to see them. That's like a kiss of death. Like, hey, I'm Dr. Trutter. I know you haven't seen me yet, and I'm a new practice, and I know you're scheduled for next week, but we didn't get our, you know, certificate of occupancy from construction, so I have to push you out for 2 weeks. That's a bad call to make. So I always say the ideal time when it comes to timing of your marketing is about 3 weeks. It's about 2 to 3 weeks before you open your doors is when you push everything out, like, actively. Now, leading up to that, there's a lot of things we could talk through when it comes to your social media, setting up, like, what I call VIP lists, like friends, family, get everybody, like, again, like that Hoover Dam where it's like the water's building and then you open up those floodgates. That's what we're talking about marketing. It's the buildup to then let it release. Your buildup is, what are you doing in the community to make connections with other businesses? What are you doing with your other, maybe it's connections that you have, maybe it's mommy groups that you have, or there might be your community where you live, your social media. Your social media should be really going a couple of months before you open your doors, at least priming a pump. Heck, I have a lot of our clients like to give, you know, updates during construction, like the day construction starts, they start talking about posts and say, hey, I'm opening soon. I mean, you see one of our clients, his name's Dr. Dan Denowitz, if you ever find him on Facebook, he talks about his entire journey, like taking pictures, what's happening, excited for this, what's happening within his construction, really kind of really preparing the entire marketplace for this. So think about the Hoover Dam when it comes to your marketing. It needs to start around, like, priming the pump around the time that you secure your real estate, leading up to about the 2 or 3 weeks prior to mark prior to opening that you're like, you release everything into the marketplace. So if you're doing, you know, Google ads, social media ads, if you're doing direct mail, if you're in a rural area or something along those lines. Number two is your budget when it comes to marketing. Don't skimp on this. People ask, how much should I spend on marketing? It depends. The more rural area, you may be able to spend a little bit less because there's less competition. The more competition that you have, the more you will spend. Things like Google AdWords and things like that, it's all based upon, you know, who's got what words and how much the spend is. And as a startup, depending on what your financial makeup is, you may not be able to outspend your competition when it comes to certain elements, but you need to have a solid budget. This could be in the range, you know, of $3,000 to $5,000 per month. You know, it could be a little bit less in some areas. It could be a little bit more, but I always say, you know, you should be ranging in your first year, $3,000 to $5,000 a month in marketing when it comes to total spend. Now, I'm not talking about the simply like what your agency is doing. I'll talk about like agency and what's out there, but you need to make sure you have a solid budget for your marketing. If you think a couple thousand dollars a month is going to do it, it may not in most marketplaces. Next, your marketing must be tracked and trackable. If you're going to do a local event in your community, for example, something that is like a local health fair or something like that. Number one, don't just show up. Be engaged and engage people that are there. And I know for most of you, you're like, but I've never marketed myself before. That's okay. You meet new people every day that comes, they sit down in front of you and you do dentistry. Don't overthink marketing. I always say this, it's more about action than perfection when it comes to marketing. I think so many people like, I'm looking for like this perfect post or this perfect thing, this perfect event. No, take action. Go out there in the community, make connections. It all needs to be tracked and trackable. So if you're going to go to an event, for example, make sure like you know like where those patients came from. If you're doing, you know, I'm not a big advocate for direct mail in certain markets, but I can pick on direct mail and say direct mail has codes on it. Your ads should have certain codes, like things that you can track and know, are these things working? Because if you're just putting out a bunch of stuff in your agency, or you're not tracking like where are patients coming from, you may be overspending in one area and underspending in the next. So all your marketing needs to be tracked and trackable. What I mean, tracked, and then have the ability of being trackable to really understand where is this marketing going and is this actually producing? Now, when it comes to your budget, usually, like I usually don't say stop one thing if one thing's not working. Usually what you do, you shift your funds from one area to the next, depending on, you know, what's happening within the marketplace. Compelling versus convincing. This is like attracting with a carrot versus a whip. I tell the story, this is kind of like an old story. So way back when, this is like the 1950s or something like that. Banks back in the day used to, he'll laugh at this. So in order for, they would attract new people, and specifically they would attract like the wives of families to open up checking accounts in banks. And it's kind of a misogynistic thing, but they said, if you open up a new bank account, we will give you a new toaster. Yes, they gave away toasters for people to get new bank accounts in the 60s, but it worked. Because what happened was like the bank managers were like, no, we need to talk about like the value of saving and the value of like being able to, you know, have a good financial plan. And, you know, I'm guessing like whatever these marketing people were, back in the day, like Mad Men or something, or sitting there going, well, what if we just gave them something? No, we need to teach them the value of money. And it's like, well, what if we just gave them a toaster? That worked. So when it comes to your marketing, you can sit there and say, oh, the value of like, you know, dental care, but maybe you need to show them like beautiful before and afters. That's compelling. Like, wow, what happened? A few months ago, one of her clients, her name is Dr. Lindsay. She plays an important role within the company now. Dr. Lindsay does, and she sent me this post on Facebook, and it was actually a post from one of her clients who's actually my dentist. And she goes, "I think this is your mouth. I had Invisalign done, and so there was like the before and after." And I was laughing because it was like, but I kind of laughed. I'm like, yes, because it showed before and after. Now that wasn't compelling for me, but like that's a compelling thing to do. If you want to sit around and try to convince people like you need dental care, you're not going to attract people. I think you need to compel people with like before and after. You also need to make it enjoyable for them and really to be compelling as opposed to convincing them of what you are providing. And last but not least, appointments versus awareness. This is the difference between branding and between marketing. I think there are a lot of great companies out there that put out great brands or talk about branding yourself. They talk about beautiful websites, and I know a lot of these people, and I think they are great people. But branding is awareness. And none of you are Coca-Cola or Apple. People know who those brands are. That is being aware. Your sole focus when it comes to when you open your doors is setting appointments. If you are at, you know, again, back to like the health fair, you're doing a local event in your community. It's a health fair. Your sole purpose is not about handing out free cups or pens or toothbrushes with your name on it. It is about setting appointments. It is about connecting with people and be able to set appointments. So I get the idea of like, this is going to be beautiful, but really make sure that you focus on appointment setting, not just the awareness. Now, one of the things I'll talk to is people talk about like, what should I do? And I'll talk about this, Dr. Katie here. What should I do for marketing? And people, and that's like a whole nother discussion, but there is not one thing that is the best thing for to answer that question. What is everybody like at the top of this part of the profits? I talked about that post. What's the thing that everybody's doing for marketing? There isn't one thing. It needs to be a collection of things. Do you need a marketing agency? Yes. Yeah, there's certain things like website development, things like that, that are great. But don't think that your agency, I'll just say this, your agency is not a marketing strategy. If anybody has seen me post this, I posted it probably a dozen plus times. An agency will not drive all your patients. You need to be responsible for driving your first, we always say, driving your first 100 patients. We say that because when you open your doors, you're new. Things like, you'll hear words like SEO, search engine optimization, and those things, those are longer term tactics. Those aren't like day one, everybody knows where you're at, and you're at the top of Google. You're not going to be unless you're the only dentist in your area. So what are you going to do to drive patients? Those things we're talking about, I talk about VIP lists. What does that mean? Talk about your family, your friends, like all the people that you can have. You have that spider web of people you're connected with, those should be contacted. Your social media, you should be able to drive your patients through the door. So we always say to our clients, you need to bring your first 100 patients through the door. Now, that's not saying that an agency is not going to drive patients, but I'm putting more of the emphasis on you as a startup. How do I get my first 100 patients? Because the marketing agency that you may be working with, that takes time. In the first 30, 60 days, they're trying to figure out like what's going to work here, what's not going to work. They're testing, they're retesting, they're A-B testing like this thing versus this. So what they're doing is after 30, 60, 90 days is they're going to get a better idea of like how the market is responding, things like your ads and things like that. So you can't just be sitting around for the first 30, 60 days going, okay, I built an office. Where's everybody? Get out there. If you're probably not going to be open 5 days a week. So I would say dedicate one full day a week to driving patients to your practice. And what I mean driving, not physically driving, but like driving them and really making connections, being on social media, doing events, connecting with other business owners. And when you go in to connect with other local business owners in your community, look at it through this lens. Don't look at it as, okay, how can they get me patients? Ask them how you can help their business. The more you give, the more you'll get in return. So Dr. Katie here, she is in the Southwest, or excuse me, Southeast. And she opened up a little bit over a month ago. And in her first month, she had 100 new patients. She's not in a rural area. her demographic, looked it up actually yesterday, and it was right around 1800 to one. So for a general dentist, people will post out there, if you're not 3000 to one, you should never start up a practice. Okay. So if we're going to use like 2001, she's about 10-15% below this illustrious number of where startup dental practices should be when it comes to general dentists. So 1,801 means there's 1,800 patients to one dentist. She's not in the area void of dentists. What did she do? She worked her pants off. She made great connections in the community. In her first month, she had her first 100 patients. The average practice in America gets about 20 to 25 new patients a month on average. That is the average startup, the average practice. She had 100 in her first month. Unbelievable. So I like to tell these stories. This is another doctor. He may see him kind of all over. His name's Dr. Andrew Ballow. He's actually my personal dentist. I show this because he now is up to over 1,600 Google reviews in a little bit over 2 years of being open. Incredible. So another thing you really want to focus on is reviews from your mark. You need to have a review system. There's a lot of companies out there like Swell. You can hire people like that in order to help get your reviews. I'm not sitting here advocating for certain companies. What I'm saying is advocating for is reviews. If you think about, if you're going to go buy a TV or most products that you purchase, Amazon or whatever, who here looked at reviews? Yeah, I do. If you're raising your hands, I don't know. Yay, Crystal, thank you. We all look at reviews. So you want to make sure like you're getting reviews, getting raving fans, because this right now is one of the main drivers of new patient growth for so many practices is what do your reviews say? What do they say about you? If you're not getting reviews and if you don't have a focus on it, you're going to be missing out on future opportunities. So day one needs to be review time. Cool. All right, I know I'm running over, so I'm going to move through this. Third element is this. So we're gone through profits, marketing strategy. Got some bones there. Now we're going to talk about purpose. And when I talk about purpose, it's this. In order to impact your life, you must find a way to impact your community. I call this the secret sauce of our clients. And this is, we call them the Fowler Boys. This is two of our clients, Dr. Greg and Dr. Kevin. And they are in Texas, and this flag is like the largest flag you can actually purchase. Ex-military, for them, their purpose was, how do I serve my community on a bigger scale? This was their purpose. They have a highly profitable practice. They also have the largest American flag, and they fly different flags sometimes too for holidays. Against our better wishes, this flag and pole cost almost $20,000. Wasn't necessarily in the budget, but for them, they said, this is our vision. This is what we want to have. This is who we serve. This is how we serve. Cool. And everybody sees that flag from miles away. What I'm not saying is have a big flag and you're going to be successful. What I'm saying is you need to find, if you want to have some secret sauce, this is probably the pinnacle of what we talk about with some of the biggest success stories we've created is having a greater purpose. What is this purpose that you want to have within the community? Is it maybe something you want to give back to? Is it, if you look at it through the lens of like, I'm simply going to do this just for make a lot of money, people will probably see through that. And in all the travels I had in almost two decades of doing this, I find dentists to be very giving people. I find you all to be very giving people, sometimes to your detriment. You give too much free dentistry sometimes, but I find that you're so giving because it is healthcare. It is dental care. It is care. And if you can find this purpose and connect authentically in your community, then it doesn't matter if a DSO comes down the street. One of our clients, his name is Dr. Ben. He's in North Carolina. People always talk about like, oh my God, a DSO is coming in. He's had two or three DSOs come in his area, couple miles from his practice, and he continues to drive new patients that come from a further distance in his community of North Carolina, even as DSOs come in. Why? Because he's a bigger purpose, and people recognize that. There are patients for DSOs. There are patients for those kinds of practices. maybe those aren't the kind of patients that you're looking to attract. But if you really want to impact your community and impact yourself and make a difference, find a greater purpose within your community. This is Dr. Lauren. I've told this story probably 50 times, but every one of our clients, or nearly every one of our clients, has something they give back to, something they've connected with in their community. It doesn't have to be sad. Dr. Lauren, she has a mountain bike trail, and she helps with a non-for-profit. And so part of her new patient exams goes to help preserve and provide the maintenance on some of the local mountain bike trails in her area of Colorado, where her practice is located. And she's got, she does this every year. She has a trail named after her practice, her team. They're all part of this huge community, what they do. Mountain biking is not a sad topic. It's probably one of the least sad topics ever. But guess what? Here's a cool thing. When she opened her doors, this non-for-profit organization invited its entire membership, over 1,000 members, to her grand opening. Because this was authentic to her and genuine to her. Dr. Brian, he partnered with something he calls 20 for 20. It's a hashtag 20 for 20. He gives back to a local community, a local charity. It's called The Hive. And they help people with mental needs conditions in his community by helping those have jobs and be able to have live more independent lives within his community. And this is something that happened. And if you ever watch the documentary, he talks about losing his sister and things like that and how it impacted his family. So for him, this is authentic to him. But this is the bigger cause. This is the bigger purpose. This is the secret sauce to this. How did this come into play? I'll just say this, we do this as well. So I like to say we practice what we preach. So you want to learn a little more about the inner workings of Ideal Practices. One of our three core values here at Ideal Practices is give. For every practice startup that we open, we simultaneously fund 10 microloans in third world countries through a company called Hope International. So when I talk about give and purpose, it's not just about wow, this feels good for startups and our practice owners. It's like, we live it as well. So this was one of the core values that we do. And so our goal is by the end of this year, 2024, we will have funded over 4,000 businesses. We're a little bit over 36 to 3,700 as we speak here today. So we will get there. Our first goal was 2,000 by 2021. Now we have a goal of 4,000 by 2024, and we'll get there. I say this because when you have a purpose, here's what it does within your community. It connects you to your community beyond dentistry and discounts. It connects them because of your values. And you can do this authentically. If a give and something like that isn't real authentic and genuine, that's cool. Doesn't mean you're going to fail. I'm just saying this is a big thing. And I see a lot of corporate dentistry tries it, or celebrities. Don't make it a gimmick. If it feels like a gimmick, looks like a gimmick, and smells like a gimmick, folks, it's a gimmick. It will hurt your reputation. If you do it right and you connect within the community, then everyone can walk around and go, hey, that's Dr. So-and-so. It could be a part of your introduction. You can say, hey, I'm Dr. So-and-so. I just opened up a new practice. Can I tell you what my practice is supporting within the community? And then you can have this rally. Like Dr. Andrew, he supports some of the biggest, and he's in Tampa here, and he supports one of the largest animal shelters. He does a gala, he does all these things, because for him, he had a couple rescue dogs, he and his wife. So it doesn't have to be involve dentistry and giving away dentistry, but it needs to be something that can be local within your community that then connects you and your team and your practice. That will separate you from so many other practices and make a huge impact. And by the way, it comes back to you. I'm not saying to do it for profits. What I'll say, it will enhance that 100%. So I'm going to leave you with this. You kind of have this great visual. So all of you, we talk about practice. So don't stop and end here. Don't stop and end at I open my doors. All of you can get open, but look beyond the affordability of it. We broke down some costs of that. What I want you to focus on is profits. The prophet's talking about get good on understanding the inner working systems of maybe the practices that you're working for. Get some clarity on what you like and dislike about the systems in the practice. Also, marketing. We talked about those five core principles. of marketing to make sure like you actually launch properly with a marketing strategy. And then lastly, is purpose. How do you tie this together? So if you kind of think about the stair step, it's like everybody can have a practice. Many people get to profits. If you wrap it up with a purpose, now this is what we call our secret sauce of like, how do you get there? How do you connect authentically within your community?
As we wrap up this episode, take a moment to picture yourself a year from now. Are you still in your associateship? Or are you rocking it at your own dental practice, creating beautiful smiles and making a real difference? If that's the dream, it's time to chase it. Before we split, make sure to hit subscribe, drop a review, and give us your rating. It helps us keep bringing you the good stuff that you're into. Until we meet again, keep taking that next step towards your future practice. Here's to investing in your dreams and making them a reality.